Sometimes the boundaries and definitions you have to break to make art are all your own. Novelist Yi-Yun Lee started out as a scientist. She grew up in China, then moved to the States. Today, she's a MacArthur genius whose books have been translated into more than 20 languages. And she's always insisted that her work is not autobiographical. But now she's come out with a memoir called Dear Friend, From My Life, I Write to You in Your Life. And in it, she reveals a lot, including two recent suicide attempts. Yi-Yun Lee told Steve Paulson how and why she took the step of writing directly about her own life.
When writing fiction, it's easier to hide behind the characters, behind everything. I was trying to erase myself as much as I could from the fiction. But I think hiding is not a best way for a writer. That's how I felt when I started writing this book. Because this book was written after some difficult time. You know, I think the whole point is for this book is not to hide anymore.
Hmm. So was writing the book part of your healing process?
You could say that, or you could say it's part of an argument against myself. You know, I think there are so many ways to look at mental illness, and I was an immunologist before I was a writer. And I look at the 2 or 3 years of this extreme situation as an autoimmune disease of the mind, which means whatever feelings my mind felt or created, it was always becoming the target of my own thinking. And while I was working on the book, I thought, well, the only thing I could do was just see how I can target my mind with analysis rather than just irrational feelings. So you have to open up all the wounds before they can heal.
Well, there's a passage in your book that gets at how complicated it is to write about suicide. And I'm wondering if you could read that.
Yes. Death, except for someone entirely isolated, is always a personal moment made public. Suicide, among the most private decisions one can make, is often taken over by the public. Those who express strong feelings mistake themselves as the center of the story. The intense emotions around suicide, anger, pity, unforgiveness, even condemnation, demand what no one has the right to claim. An explanation. A suicide can be dismissed as a drama gone awry and entering the realm of melodrama. If a tragedy makes us weep out of compassion, and a comedy makes us laugh out of appreciation, a melodrama alienates and discomforts. It meets no one's expectation, but its internal need to feel. My intention is not to defend suicide. I might have done so at another time in my life, but I have arrived at a point where defending and disputing my actions are the same argument. Everything I say is scrutinized by myself, not only the words and their logic, but also my motives. A self dissecting itself finds little repose.
So we should back up for a moment and talk about how you became a novelist, because it's a pretty remarkable story. I mean, you took a very unlikely path to get to this point.
Yes.
You grew up in China. Did you ever think about becoming a novelist while you were growing up?
No, I had never thought about writing. When I was young, I was a mathematics genius, little, you know, prodigy. So I was trained as a mathematician when I was young. And I was a scientist. I thought I was going to become the Madame Curie of China. Yeah, I know. It didn't happen. I'm sorry. I disappointed everyone. But I came to America to become an immunologist. And I happened to land in Iowa City, Iowa, where everybody writes. So I just took a couple writing classes, and I really fell in love with writing. And it took me a few years to leave my science career and to become a writer.
So you were, what, 23 when you left China to come to the U.S.?
Yes, I was 23. And I was 30 when I really started seriously to become a writer.
Now, going back to your time in China, because you spend a lot of time in this book writing about China, and a lot of it is about your difficult relationship with your mother, who I gather was a very controlling presence as you were growing up.
Yes, my mother is a controlling figure, and partly I think she has this overwhelming love for me, and she's almost a child in a way. And ever since I was probably, I would say 4 or 5, I think she was relying on me to be her mental caretaker. And that created a lot of burdens and tensions between us.
So she was always there, kind of looking over you, criticizing you, probably, in terms of, you know, how you were living. Is that partly why you wanted to leave China, just to get away from that?
Yes, absolutely. When I was 10, I knew the only thing I wanted to do was to go to America, because that way I could leave home. I could stop living in Beijing, where, of course, my parents still live. And I think, yes, you're right. She's always been there. She's this huge presence. And I think what troubles her is I don't love her enough. So that's where she always says I'm selfish, because I cannot, you know, I cannot return my love as she loves me.
So to skip ahead then to the story of, you know, you come to America, you are training to be an immunologist. I mean, you actually are working in a science lab for a while, but then you start taking writing classes and you realize, you know, you want to be a writer. And I mean, you say that there was this period of a few years where you were working in the lab during the day, and I think you had some kids, you had young kids at the time.
Yes.
And you would write each night between midnight and 4 in the morning?
Yes. Yes. And I said in the book, I was greedy. I wanted everything. So I needed a full-time job. I wanted to take care of my 2 young children. But I also wanted to write. So when you have young children, there's really no time. But from midnight to 4, that's almost the only time I could get away from my life to focus on writing. So I did for about 10 years of that.
Wow, which, 10 years
course,
it,
yes.
Up in the middle of the night. Wow.
I know. But then I think, you know, of course, you know, in the past few years, we have seen so much research about sleep deprivation, how that can affect people's mental situation, mental condition. And I do think the lack of sleep probably contributed to this downward, you know, spiral a few years ago.
Huh. There are so many interesting parts of this story that you're telling. And one is your decision to write in English. I mean, basically rejecting your native language of Chinese. Why did you want to write in English?
Yes. I had never written in Chinese. I always have this, I would say, you know, complicated, even, you know, intense relationship with Chinese language. I grew up memorizing all these Asian poems, and I could use the language well. I call it public language, really propaganda language, was used in everyday life. And I had a strong dislike of that kind of language. So I never thought about writing. And when I was in China, I could write propaganda well. I was in the army. I could write beautiful propaganda. So English, however, you know, it's this language that I took up as my language. So I call English my first language in writing, but English is also just a language that I use to think and to sort through everything in life. I think English provides this space, or I create this space with English for myself, that I did not do that with my native language.
Well, you get at some of this in a passage in the book, and I'd love to have you read that. What you do in Chinese, what you do in English.
Yes. Over the years, my brain has managed Chinese. I dream in English. I talk to myself in English. And memories, not only those about America, but also those about China. Not only those carried on, but also those archived with the wish to forget, are sorted in English. To be orphaned from my native language felt, and still feels, a crucial decision. I have declined to have my books translated into Chinese, which is understood by some as odiously pretentious. Once in a while, my mother will comment, hinting at my selfishness, that I have deprived her of the pleasure of reading my books. But Chinese was never my private language, and it will never be. That I write in English doesn't make me part of something else. The verdict of my professor in graduate school was that I was writing in a language that did not belong to me, hence I would not and should not belong. But this protest was irrelevant. I have not been using the language to be part of something. When we enter a world, a new country, a new school, a party, a family, or a class reunion, an army camp, a hospital, we speak the language it requires. Perhaps the line between the two languages, the public and the private, is and should be fluid. It is never so for me. I often forget when I write that English is also used by others. English is my private language. Every word has to be pondered over before it becomes my word. I have no doubt can this be an illusion, that the conversation I have with myself, however linguistically flawed, is the conversation that I have always wanted, in the exact way I want it to be.
That is so fascinating. Do you consider yourself an American writer or a Chinese writer, or do those labels not matter to you?
I am an American writer by training, which means I became a writer in America. But I never really think about these labels. You know, sometimes I say I would like to be called an international writer. I think that might be the best to describe me. But, you know, that doesn't even count as much. I think I just want to say I'm a writer.
Yi-Yun Lee's new book is called Dear Friend, From My Life, I Write to You in Your Life. She talked with Steve Paulson.